AIM Nashville Studios. It's time for Darren, Donick, and Chase. With hosts Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe. On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Darren, Donick, and Chase, we're live here at the Patron Platinum Club. It's a Predators game day broadcast, Preds and Capitals. Tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop here on these airwaves. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6 o'clock. Over on the television side, Bally Sports, Willie and his crew will begin their coverage at 6:30. We say hello to Tim Hasselbeck. Did we not have the music?
I can kickstart your heart. Hey, I can kickstart your heart if you want, like now that the season's over. But, I mean.
Well, I'll say this, Tim.
For a little bit of a loop.
We did go to the restroom during the break, and there is an area downstairs where bands typically or musicians practice, and, you know, they do stuff down there in this big room. It felt like Motley Crue was down there because the walls were shaking in the bathroom. So I don't know who it was down there. I don't believe it was JT. It sounded like somebody that's got a little pep in their step with their music. Because it was shaking the walls.
Hey, listen, like I can be a Motley Crue guy. Like little known fact. For my bachelor party, I did go to a Poison concert and end up backstage with Bret Michaels and Nikki Sixx.
So,
I mean, like, whatever, man. You know?
Really? Oh, do tell. Do tell.
There may be some pictures circulating on the internet.
Oh, my.
Was he
a cool guy? He seems like a cool guy.
We had a good time. Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of a reunion tour at that point.
Okay, I think that was our cue to move on. But I'm glad you brought it up, though. That was good. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, the suit, Tim's best friend, has just left the building, which is shocking that the suit left with you.
Listen,
on here. But
look, there are a few people more important in Nashville than Chase. So, like, it's a miracle he can fit it all in one day.
Yeah, he did grace us with 2 hours today, and he'll probably come back next month. So, but we appreciate the 2 hours on the show that still has his name on it. But you can do that when you're the suit, right? You can have your name on a show and just do, like, 2 hours a week.
I was just about to say something that was going to get me in trouble. Do you have football questions?
You seem like you're going down some rabbit holes you want to get out of. All right, let's get to football then.
My guard is down now that the season's over and my travel lightens up.
All right, well, let's go there then. We had Bob Kravitz on at the beginning of the show today to just kind of get the lay of the land in Indy. It's obviously already zoomed quickly to awkward, and it just doesn't feel like Carson Wentz is going to be back there. And that's certainly the picture that Bob Kravitz painted and said Jim Irsay's involved in this, and he doesn't want Wentz back. And we know how this works. If the owner doesn't want somebody back, then typically that's how it goes. How do you see this playing out, and how did it get to this point so quick in Indianapolis?
Well, I think it was well documented, the frustration that, and listen, whether they can say it publicly or not, or whether they will say it publicly or not, you know, I think we all kind of know the story. But I think there was clearly some frustration about how, you know, the vaccination situation was playing out in Indy. And
oh, yeah,
another,
Bob brought it up.
Places.
Yeah, yep.
No doubt. And so, and like, people can put their head in the sand and they're not, but like, let's face it, like, Jim Irsay was frustrated about it. And, you know, Carson Wentz, between, like, the injury at the start of training camp and, you know, just kind of whether it was his play at times, you know, not all the time, but at times, that situation, yeah, just don't feel like it was necessarily his guy. And so, Look, I mean, look, you know, owners are just like anyone else that's running the business. If they're unhappy with an employee, you know, they're going to do whatever they can to move on. And so, I mean, look at the Rams. The Rams had the number one overall pick. You got picked before Carson Wentz, signed him to a new contract. But when they weren't happy with how he was doing his job, they traded him to dump his contract. So, you know, how do I think it plays out? Yeah, like for as strong as a report as it was, and I'm pretty sure it came from our guys, whether it was, you know, Mort or Adam. And,
it was Mort, wasn't it?
Yeah, and listen, Mort's been doing this too wrong to have that be, you know, bogus. So, I would think that's the case. And then because there's going to be other quarterbacks that are on the move, so whether it's Russell Wilson or whether it's Jimmy Garoppolo, whether it's whomever it may be, you know, I think it seems like the Indianapolis Colts want to be in the game.
So what does this mean for Carson Wentz? Because they've got until March 19th, and then they're going to have to make a move in the next month. So let's just say they do it. They just come out. Carson Wentz has been released by the Indianapolis Colts. This is a guy that was drafted second overall. Philadelphia traded him away and said, you know what, we're ready to move on. Frank Reich was supposed to be the guy who was going to fix this guy, and in a year, he's gone from Indy. What does it say about Carson Wentz moving forward? I mean, how many teams are going to be looking to sign up for Carson Wentz?
Well, some will. Like,
really?
Like here's a good example. Well, Darren, what's Seattle doing?
Yep, so you got to have a quarterback. There's more teams and needs than there are good quarterbacks, even decent quarterbacks.
So what's Seattle doing? What's Miami going to end up doing? What is what is Houston going to end up doing? What's Tampa going to do? What's Carolina going to do? You know, because you say how many teams are going to sign up. I don't know how many will sign up, but enough will sign up. And I'm not saying that, you know, the situation in Carolina, you know, would be the same situation that it most likely will be in Seattle. But, you know, if you were a quarterback that felt like, listen, I can still play. I'd rather go be a starter than go somewhere where I'm waiting for the current starter to fail to get my opportunity. Like Carolina is as good of a spot to go as any. I mean, think about look at what Ryan Tannehill did here. Didn't work in Miami, so he ends up in Tennessee, but Mariota's the guy. Like, he wasn't even really brought in to compete. He was maybe brought in to push, to have an option, but he wasn't brought in to compete. And then he gets the opportunity and he turns it around. And so I think that, you know, so the question is who's going to do that for Wentz? I don't know who will do it, but somebody will do it because they're going to need to.
What is going on with Kyler Murray in Arizona? I mean, this thing it's taken a turn as well.
Yeah, honestly, I think this is a great example of a guy that is, you know, probably, you know, not faced a ton of adversity, you know, in his athletic career. And, you know, things have always come easy. He's probably never been blamed for anything. And, you know, I think the situation is such where, you know, he probably, you know, has not handled a situation where, you know, some people are being critical of him. I mean, but look, I said this to you guys before the season started. It was kind of like, hey, off the radar MVP candidate. I told you Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray, you know, can be like as good as anybody at quarterback in the NFL. He's just that talented. And, you know, the only thing I hear, and I'm not there, but the only thing I hear kind of about him is kind of like the, you know, the attention to detail, the leadership, like those are the kinds of things that you hear about Kyler. Like, not that he's not a hard worker. Like, I think he knows how to work hard. Not that, you know, he's not a leader, because he definitely is. People for sure look at him. But, like, there's an element. Like, I'll never forget this past preseason. And I get it. Nobody likes to play in the preseason if you already have, a solidified job, okay? But, like, you ever hear Tom Brady talk about the preseason? He'd be like, well, I hope I play. Like, I hope I can get as many reps as I can to play. I really don't believe Tom actually felt that way, but I feel like he knew it was important for him to behave that way so that it sent a message to everybody else on the team that wasn't as ready for the season as he was. And Kyler Murray this year was getting ready for preseason game. I mean, he said to our Monday night crew that he didn't want to play in the preseason game. Like, I was blown away by it. Not because I didn't think that it was true in terms of how he felt. I was blown away because of the message that it sends to everybody else, guys that are actually competing for starting jobs on the football team. So I just think there are things like that with Kyler Murray that, you know, kind of show a bit of an immaturity, you know, that is the difference between the way kind of like the elite of the elite guys handle it. And so, you know, how do I think it plays out? You know, I'm not exactly sure. I'm guessing that, you know, cooler heads prevail because it's kind of the best situation for both guys. But that's what I think is going on in Arizona.
Well, I'll say this, Tim. It's alarming because Willie and Chase know this. I am pro Kyler Murray. I draft him every year in fantasy. I am pro Kyler Murray. But they know every time I talked about Kyler Murray this year, watching their games, and I watched a lot of their games, I would come on these airwaves every week and say, every time I would reference Kyler Murray, I would say the same thing over and over again. His body language sucks.
Yep.
It's awful. Yep. And if I can see that on television, right, it's not me being around him in the locker room. It's not covering him on a day-to-day basis. If I can just watch his games on television and come on these airwaves in Nashville, Tennessee, and say, I like Kyler Murray, but, man, he needs to change his body language because it's awful. How bad is it really behind the scenes if I can observe that on just watching him?
Yeah, listen, you're exactly right. I mean, you guys know that I have, you know, kids that play sports. A daughter in high school is a very good athlete, and boys in middle school and lower school that, you know, that play sports. And you know, I've coached them in things. I will tell you, the thing I talk to my kids about most when it comes to sports is body language. Yep. And being a good teammate.
Yep.
It's just, that's what I talk. Amen. To them. I don't talk about, like, hey, you know, when you throw, this is what you, like, I don't coach technique. I don't coach strategy. I talk body language and being a good teammate. One, because I believe in it. I think it's a contagious attitude on a team. And the other reason I believe it, and I have seen it, and I'll give you an example of this. I know you talked to my brother last week. I know you guys have had Trent on before. I saw it firsthand with my brother and Trent when one guy was a starter and one was a backup, and then it switched. I've seen it with other guys. I'm friends with, you know, quarterbacks that have been kind of in that situation before, whether it's been, you know, somebody like Nick Foles, who's been a backup and then been a starter and then it's been a backup. Here's the deal. The way you handle yourself in brutal situations, so whether it's like a guy not playing or a guy not playing well, a guy being told to do something that he feels is unfair, whatever it is, like, the way you can be a great teammate and the way you can be a leader is how you handle that situation. Because then when things are going well for you and you have teammates that it is not going well for, you have credibility when you try to help them through their situation. But when you're pouting and you've got bad body language and it's always everybody else's problem, you have zero credibility when you're trying to lead other guys through the adversity that they're facing as a teammate. And so I just believe that because I've seen it way too many times, and it comes back around. It just does. That's how sports works. And so I think for Kyler, I just, you know, like, the whole idea was like Colt McCoy was going to go out there and, you know, Colt's leadership and demeanor and influence was going to help them. And I think a lot of people thought that'd be true because of how great Colt is. But, like, Kyler just appears to not absorb it, to be honest.
That's good stuff. I love it. All right, more with Tim Hasselbeck On the other side, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Talking NFL football with Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN here on 102.5 The Game. Tim, I want to ask you one more on the whole Carson Wentz situation with the Colts, because I just find it really interesting, because there are some parallels to the Titans situation. If you're sitting there and you're not satisfied with your quarterback at the moment, and you're caught up in the whole, you know, last impression, obviously Carson Wentz's flop in the last two games was a big factor. You mentioned something that's hard to quantify, is how much did the refusal to be vaccinated and then what happened at the end, which almost cost him a start, and he didn't get the practice going into that Raiders game. That certainly factored in. But if you're going to make the change, it's $15 million to cut him, right? So the person you bring in, you have to give up whatever resources you're going to give up, pay that guy, and then tack on $15 million extra to your salary cap. How do you find a better option given those circumstances? And Will, do you think they'll come back to the conclusion of, you know what, we're stuck with this guy?
Yeah, they could come back to that conclusion. But I think the other thing that could end up happening is, you know, the report, you know, they're going to do that could, you know, also be a signal, you know, much like, you know, with what happened with Jared Goff, you know, to a team that, you know, is thinking, you know, how to handle some type of reset, right? Are there any takers in terms of helping you absorb that money, you know, but via trade, right? I mean, there could be some other factors that way, but I think what they're doing, knowing the risk of having to cut him, is what they're essentially, you know, making the decision, we want to go another direction at quarterback. And I think, you know, Willie, just to be honest, like with the guys that may be available, I think they're feeling like, look, we're willing to take that chance with quarterbacks that we think may end up being on the move. So, you know, I think that's, you know, that's why you do it. I think there's obviously risk involved in doing that, but, you know, I don't think it's crazy to say, like, we'll choose a guy that people here are familiar with. Let's just say, like, you get Marcus Mariota. It wouldn't be top-tier starter money, but do you think there's a chance they feel like, look, we can get Mariota to potentially play better than Carson Wentz played? In many sense, not that they were right, but they felt that Andy Dalton was going to play better, you know, than Nick Foles would have played. So I do think that there are, you know, there are spots and there are ways for guys to try to figure out, you know, how to improve at the position without landing like the most marquee guy
right
at the spot. What's going to happen with Jameis Winston?
That's another interesting one. Now, if those are the names, then those are intriguing ones, because they're not going to cost you what, for example, if you wanted to play the Russell Wilson game, that's still going to be a trade, right? The Colts don't have a first-round pick. And then you have to figure out what else can you trade Seattle and then sign him to a deal, correct? So that's a huge investment. And I've said this
about Seattle, and here's the thing. Like, we don't know how Seattle feels about some of those quarterbacks that I just mentioned. But I do know, and I've said this to you guys before, had Chicago had a quarterback option, like had they had somebody that Seattle wanted, then Russell Wilson would have been in Chicago. But really, Seattle didn't feel like they were going to be able to get their hands on a quarterback that they wanted, and so they stayed put with Russell Wilson. So, you know, who knows? Like, who knows how Seattle feels about Carson Wentz? Like, who knows how Seattle feels about, you know, Winston or Mariota or, you know, some of these Jimmy Garoppolo, whoever it may be. I have another one for you, and it sounds crazy, okay? But I think Aaron Rodgers is going to end up back in Green Bay, okay?
I've
said all along, from the time they drafted him, is the timeline didn't work. The timeline didn't work for Jordan Love. So here's the deal. Let's say Aaron comes back, all right? And if Aaron comes back, because of the guys that they have up and because of Aaron's cap number, Aaron's going to have to redo a deal that kicks the can down the road, kind of like, you know, they did in New Orleans with Drew Brees. And so if you do that, okay, that's great and it's fine. I think it's the right way to chase the championship. But you just you run out of runway for Jordan Love. And so at that point, you kind of just need to move on because you're not going to be able to pick up his fifth-year option. So you're better off getting something halfway decent for Jordan Love with somebody that thinks, you know what, like, look, Jordan Love was drafted where he was drafted. We think he can be a star. Like, let's make the trade and go get Jordan Love rather than drafting, you know, Sam Howell or Kenny Pickett, whoever they're going to draft.
Hmm. Let's talk another quarterback. Matthew Stafford, we've talked about this, kicked around a lot of the shows the last 2 days, but when you win the Super Bowl, it has everybody asking these questions. We don't know what is in store for Matthew Stafford from here on, but when you win one, and then you're trying to quantify his value as the Lions starter, and they did have, I think, what, four winning seasons. I looked at it yesterday. He had some moderate success relative to the success of the franchise. Is he in the Hall of Fame discussion yet for you, or do you need to see a lot more?
He 100% is in the Hall of Fame discussion for me. Played 13 years. He's, you know, I get that he's got a sub, you know, 500 record, but I think we know, you know, part of the reason that was because of being the number one overall pick, going to a franchise that, you know, just couldn't win. Like, for perspective, okay, he's thrown for just under 50,000 yards. 50,000 yards. He's thrown over 320 touchdown passes and 160 picks. 323 touchdown passes. Like, I mean, his production, like here's the thing for me, and this is where I stand on it. Like, I don't think, to me, he didn't become a better quarterback because he, you know, won a Super Bowl. Like, I already knew he was an amazing quarterback. But he wins the Super Bowl, and for the discussion and stuff, it changes everything for, you know, for that for me. But, like, just to put, like, that in perspective, okay, Troy Aikman, who's in the Hall of Fame, who I think, you know, we'd agree is a great quarterback and all that, he threw for 32,000 yards. I get it, it's a different era and stuff, but he threw 165 touchdowns. Matthew Stafford's thrown over 320.
That's becoming the hardest thing to do, right, is to line up in the context
yeah,
of person's
listen,
stats.
It's hard in the context, but, like,
yeah,
those numbers are absurd. Like, those numbers are crazy. Like,
oh, yeah.
Let's do it with Kurt Warner, okay? Kurt Warner's in the Hall of Fame, okay? I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Kurt Warner has played 13 years, okay? Played 13 years. He's thrown for 32,000 yards, over 32,000 yards. He threw 208 touchdowns. Like, and listen, I think Kurt's a very good friend of mine. Kurt is in the Hall of Fame. I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think you can tell the story of the NFL without telling Kurt Warner's story, okay? Saw his movie this winter. It's awesome. Go see it with your family. It's incredible. Like, he threw 208 touchdowns. Matthew Stafford has thrown over 320 touchdowns.
Hmm.
Like,
yeah, the counting stats are definitely in his favor.
Okay, and I will say this. As a guy that, you know, was in the league at a time where Stafford was in the league, I think there was overlap. Yeah, we had to be. And, like, has watched him closely and have, like, studied throws that most guys can make and then that some guys can make and that very few guys can make. Like, I don't know a guy that's played in Matthew Stafford's era that doesn't think that he's an app. That doesn't look at him with and have like the utmost respect for his ability and just how talented and amazing he is. I mean, that's real because he's just so physically gifted and some throws that he makes and the degree of difficulty, you know, other guys can't make. I don't know if you guys have seen, you know, the 22-yard pass on the final drive to Cooper Kupp. I think NFL Films has put out a shot of it. But, like, that is a no-look throw in that situation. Like, that is any quarterback that's ever played scout team, that is a scout team throw on the most important drive of his career. Like, I can't tell you how impressive that is. So, like, you ask me, like, where he stands. Like, for me, do I think he's a Hall of Famer? Yeah, I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think if you had a vote and you don't vote for him to go to the Hall of Fame, like, I would really want to know why.
Yeah, well, we're on the same page on that. Tim, appreciate it as always. Great stuff. Have a great week, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, sounds good. See you, fellas.
All right, Tim Hasselbeck. Good stuff from him, as always. Willie, tell everybody about Lee Company.
Excellent stuff. I have to reconsider my...
That was...
have to reconsider...
No hesitation.
Mr. Stafford, the legacy. Okay. I respect what Tim said. Okay, let me tell you about Lee Company. We're here at Bridgestone Arena. Predators in action tonight. You've got the half-off concessions through the first intermission for anybody that comes. And for season ticket holders, you get it throughout the entire night. Peter Laviolette and the Capitals in town, Alex Ovechkin, this is the place to be tonight. And Lee Company will have their display throughout Bridgestone Arena, as always, here in Smashville. Plus, proud sponsor of our radio coverage here on 102.5 The Game. Also, an array of services. If you're sitting at your desk right now and it's been nagging at you for a while, I've got a maintenance problem that I need to call somebody to take care of. Whether it's maybe you're working from home, maybe it's at your business. Either way, Lee Company is a phone call away or an online appointment away. 615-567-1000. Or go to leecompany.com. You can jump on there. You let them know the problem. They'll be out to fix it. Your mind will be clear. The problem will get taken care of, and you can come watch the Predators play and do your thing, finish your work day, and be stress-free. That's what they're talking about at Lee Company. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you. The phone number again, 615-567-1000.